Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
Hey, what's up, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs and leaders looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. The other day, I got an email from friend of the show, Goff, a filmmaker from Australia, announcing the release of his latest film on BeerNutsProductions.com, and it's called How to Land That Dream Job. Naturally, I had to have him on again to not only talk about his 17th film, but to also share about his soup to beer nuts approach to making films. We talk about how his need to be organized as a blind man is the foundation of his creative process, what he learned in the making of this film, how his viewers help him to up his game, and how we all need to be a little more open-minded in our cinema choices. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/277.
It's your barbecue, so whenever you're ready.
I'll put the shrimp on. All right, Goff, welcome back to Getting Work to Work. Hey, number four, let's hope we don't succumb to the problems that usually plague the fourth in a series, like Kingdom of a Crystal Skull or Die Hard. You know the drill. We've got a very low bar in this episode. And I love that I am on your West Coast promotion tour when you're releasing films. So for those who don't know you, why don't you introduce yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, like you say, my name's Goff. I'm from the Gold Coast in Australia. That's good English. And I'm a filmmaker and a writer, if you can believe that from my previous sentence. But I run a film production company called Beer Nuts Productions, and we make mainly movies, but also audio downloads and a whole range of other stuff. But predominantly films, and we've just released our 17th film, which you got a bit of a sneaky look at, a sneak peek at, but it is now available to for everybody to download as well. But our 17th film, How to Land That Dream Job, has just dropped yesterday. So nice. Very excited.
Awesome. I have to ask, what was your worst job interview experience in real life that inspired this film?
As in me interviewing or me being the interviewer?
I'll take both.
Okay. Well, you may find this hard to believe, Chris, but a lot of those characters are based on people who have come in for audition. I mean, I audition a lot of actors. I've seen lots and lots of actors come through, and I reckon I've seen all of those people that are in this film come in for an audition at one stage.
Man, you just skipped ahead of my next question. That's awesome.
I mean, I know, look, at the end of the day, I mean, there's for people who are going, what the hell is he talking about? So the film basically is a mockumentary, and it's I interview 16 different job applicants for a range of different jobs, mm-hmm. and it's sort of a guide on what not to do when you go for a job, or what to do when you go to a job interview. And so each character is basically an exaggerated stereotype. So, you know, we've got a whole range of because I like dealing in stereotypes, because mm-hmm. stereotypes are fun. So, they're basically 16 exaggerated stereotypes of what you may or may not face when you are hiring people.
Yeah. And I love not only are the employees coming in to interview, not only are they the stereotypes, but in a way you're the stereotype as well.
Yeah, I'm like the arrogant dickhead boss pretty much. So
exactly.
Yeah. That really wasn't acting though. That was just me just doing what I do. But
that was just Saturday.
Yeah, that was just Saturday. But yeah, no, so, I mean, we've got, I'm just trying to think. So, yeah, I'd like to think of it that when people watch this film, at least 8 out of the 16 people that come in for a job interview, they've met in their life some way or another, you know. So hopefully it's kind of relatable to people, because they're mm-hmm. like, I know a dude like that, or I met a woman like that just the other day. So hopefully they get the where I'm going with each character.
Yeah. Well, and as usual, you are on brand as an equal opportunity jokester, and you just obliterate the line in this film.
I like that. I like that you think that and that I did that. That's yeah. That's pleasing to me.
Well, because at first I'm like, oh, wow, he just went there. And then he went, you know, to another place. And then eventually I'm like, the line is gone. This is great. And, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but I love the inclusion of a certain scene where there's an interpreter, and that's all I'm going to say. And I was not expecting that. And I actually loved the inclusion of that a lot.
It came as a bit of a surprise. Weren't expecting that, hey?
Exactly.
No, well, that's good, man. I'm really glad. And like I say, you know, it's important to me, like you say, to be an equal opportunity. I mean, if you're going to pick on one thing, you have to pick on everything. So mm-hmm. if I'm going to pick on one section of the community, that means I have to pick on every section of the community. So, I mean, in this, you've got like a snobby housewife bitch sort of character. you got your rough heroin addict mother type of a character, and you've got that asshole guy that everybody knows around the office. You got your stereotype, you know, thug criminal type. So, I mean, there's hopefully I've ticked every box. I make a very special effort. I know it sounds kind of funny to insult everybody equally, but I do make a very concerted effort to do that, because at the end of the day, I don't want people thinking that I'm picking on anybody, because I'm picking on everybody. Everybody right. gets a serve, you know? What, if you're going to give somebody a whack, you got to give everybody a whack, and that includes myself, you know? So
yeah, absolutely.
I don't come off smelling like roses after people watch this film, that's for sure.
So when you're writing a film like this, what sort of research are you doing? Obviously, you're mining the past for examples, but you know, what are you consuming or taking in that informs the script?
Well, it's quite funny in a way. Like, so how this script came about was after the last film, what I do is I've got on my computer, I've got like a whole bunch of scripts and ideas and all sorts of things that are written down. And so I go through all of them, and I'd written down four like little comedy sketches of job interviews. So the first one I remember writing was the criminal. He was the first guy I wrote. And then the stuttering guy was the next one I wrote. And then I forget what the other two were, and I thought, well, why don't I sort of team these up and make them into a bit of a mockumentary? And then I've got those corners of society covered. Well, I need to now cover the rest of society. So that's what I did. I set about thinking, okay, who am I missing out? Oh, I'm missing out that kind of guy. Okay. And I'm missing that kind of, like, you know, there's a real slutty girl in there. So I'm missing out the slutty girl. So I've got to put her in, and, you know, and then I'm missing out on this and that. And obviously at the beginning of the film with presentation, how you present mm-hmm. yourself. So it's important that, you know, I just flushed it out and kept editing and making it work.
Yeah, that's great. I love hearing the process of how you go from that initial idea to the finished form. Because what it does is I think it speaks to the grammar of your comedy, in a sense, is, you know, how you work and bring these stories to life. That's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty much how that one came to be. So it was just a couple of comedy sketches, and I'm like, well, like I say, and then I'm thinking about, well, I can make these sketches, so how do I make it into something? And mm-hmm. then, well, we'll just continue the job interview theme, and then we need to obviously cover every aspect of that theme, so I don't miss out on anything. And so that's where the editing process. I mean, so I quickly write everything down. And then the editing process of reading it and fixing it and fixing mm-hmm. it and editing it and all that sort of stuff, that takes a long time to do all that kind of stuff. There's actually a guy who was really helpful to me when I was younger with script writing. I remember complaining to him once and saying, oh, I hate editing my scripts. You know, it's so boring. And he's like, you've got the wrong attitude. That's totally the wrong attitude. It's an exciting thing to edit your scripts because you're making them better. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing. So edit, 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 because you're just doing nothing but improving it. So you need to look at it completely the other way. And he's absolutely 100% correct.
Yeah. One of the things that really speaks to, I think, the power of your writing process is one of my favorite moments in the film is when you hold on a freeze frame of each candidate at the end and almost give your commentary. And what I loved about that is, like, I can imagine sitting in a room kind of debriefing after an interview, and these are all the internal thoughts that you have, but you shouldn't say, but you're saying them. And so what was the inspiration for that?
Well, you just can't have the sketch alone. You need to have, like, I mean, this is a mockumentary, so you have to, like, quote unquote, learn something from each scene. So I've got to give a learning experience from each scene. So the actual sketches were written first, and then those voiceover bits came in later, because then I read through the sketch and I'm like, okay, well, what can we learn from this? And then I write what we can learn. I don't know if learn's the correct word, but that's what I'm going to go with.
Oh, absolutely. I would go with learn, because, you know, we learn things like don't be a dickhead.
Well, that's an important lesson to learn.
Yes, it is. And no one wants to look at pictures of your kids.
Some people need to be taught not to be a dickhead.
That's what the title of this episode should be.
Learn how not to be a dickhead.
That's right.
By Chris Martin and friends.
And friends. Ooh, that might be my next podcast.
But no. So yeah, when I was writing it, those voiceover bits, because those voiceover bits are super important, and that's what holds the whole thing together. Mm-hmm. And but they were the very last thing to get written, because obviously that's you got to have the idea first, and then you got to go back and go, okay, well, what are we getting out of this sketch? What's the audience going to learn from this particular moment in time? Mm-hmm. So that's how that one pretty much went about.
Yeah, that's great. So you're reflecting on what you learn from each of these experiences. For you as the filmmaker, what did you learn in the making of this film?
That's a very good question. What did I learn? I learned that dealing with 21 actors can be troublesome at times. I learned that much. Especially, they all seem to like to arrive early. So we're filming and I'm like, you're like an hour early, buddy. You just go sit over there, you know. You've had your makeup done. There's nothing more I can do for you right now. You arrive on time. Yeah, but, you know, that's me being a jerk. In all seriousness, you do learn from every experience. So when it came to this one, I know even though it's all set in the, well, predominantly in the one location, it wasn't as easy to film in that office as what you would probably think. Mm-hmm. So Simon and I did a lot of test filming in there, because obviously you got the harsh fluoro lights, the room naturally echoes being an office space. So we did a lot of test filming to make sure we could get it as good as we possibly could with the equipment that we had. So I suppose one thing is, I mean, when I was writing it, I'm like, oh, well, this will be a breeze because we're in an office. How easy, and I own an office. So how easy is this going to be to film? I'll just use my own office and away we go. This is going to be a piece of cake. But no, doesn't turn out like that, because there's a lot more things to be taken under consideration, you know? So yeah, I suppose that would be the biggest lesson is, you know, even if something looks simple on paper, it might not be that simple, but like I'm a very organized person. It annoys a lot of people, but it's just who I am. I mean, when you're blind like I am, one of the things you're taught as a kid is to be ultra organized, because I can't just get in my car and drive down to the shops. You know, I need to walk there or find a mode of transport. So, you know, you have to be organized in how you live your life when you're blind, because it's just, well, it makes life easier for you, so that if something was to come up, you've got a plan on how to attack that particular problem. So that's carried through to my work. So I'm very organized. So that's why, even though I thought it was going to be easy, I still made Simon come in a few times to test things. And that's when we discovered it's not going to be as easy as what we thought. And that's when we had to make little changes and alterations to how we were going to film it. But I suppose the learning experience is not to take anything for granted and to make sure that you are properly organized, because yeah, I'm just one for organisation through and through. Like I say, it annoys some people terribly, but I don't care. It's how it needs to be.
Absolutely. And I think that sense of organization is what has led you to make 17 films. Because, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of wing it this time. I'm going to do cinema verite mockumentary, you know, and it's just like, you know, I'm just going to let it flow this time, or I'm not feeling it this time. But I mean, I think that sense of organization and that sense of, let's call it purpose, I think leads to a very successful career.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I mean, in Australia, we have a very common saying in Australia, which is, she'll be right, mate, which essentially means no need to worry. Everything's good. She'll be right, mate. And that just annoys me beyond all belief, because no, she won't be right, mate. It'll only be right if you organize yourself and you've got your shit together and you know what you're doing. Then everything will be right. If you just, you know, wing it and think everything's going to just fall into place, well, I mean, life doesn't happen like that. So, and that's why, I mean, I need to be organized in regards to budgeting, because, mm-hmm. I mean, I've only got a certain amount of money to make my movies with. And so I need to make sure that I'm budgeting correctly and that everything, because, I mean, this was quite an expensive movie with the size of the cast and crew that I needed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was important for me to make sure everybody, well, obviously everybody needs to get paid. So I've got to make sure that everything is budgeted right down to the nth degree to make sure that everything's okay, to make sure that I have enough money to start with. I mean, so the very first thing I do is after I write the script, I go through it and I budget it to make sure that everything is accounted for 100%, even down to the props. I mean, I've got to make sure that, because there's a few little props in this, so I've got to make sure that what do I have, what do I need to buy, and what can I source, you know, that sort of thing. So there's a lot more to it than what people may initially think.
Yeah. Did that part of it come naturally to you, where you're breaking a script down to budget it?
Absolutely, because I write it. So,
okay. Yeah,
and I guess, again, being anally organized kind of helps me out in that regard too. So, yeah, no, that sort of stuff comes pretty straightforward because I've written it, so I know what's involved with it. And then it's just, like I say, even down, I think props are a really good example, and costumes as well. So what do the actors own, or what do I own? Mm-hmm. What can I borrow from somebody? What do I know that, you know, Charlie Johnson has this, and if I ask him nicely, he might let me borrow it for a day. And then what do I need to actually go out and purchase? And same with costumes, you know, because, I mean, there's a couple of outrageous costumes in this one. So it was, you know, what do I need to go to the costume shop and hire? What will other actors own? And then, again, what do I have that I might be able to lend an actor? So, yeah, or what can an actor go out and source from one of their friends? So it takes a lot of back and forth and organization to get those finer details right. Because, I mean, when we're talking about the stereotype characters like that are in this film, they need to make sure they, you know, they look the part. I mean, otherwise people aren't going to believe it. So that's where, again, so Alicia, it was the first time I'd worked with Alicia, our new makeup artist, mm-hmm. and she absolutely crushed it. She hit it out of the park. The makeup was absolutely superb.
Yeah, I thought your makeup was especially good as well.
Well, poor Alicia, she ran out of foundation because my big, bald, shiny head just kept shining up under those lights, and having to wear the suit like I did, I'm sweating it all off. And I reckon she used about 10 pounds of powder on top of my big, bald melon. So, yeah.
I think there was it a photo on Instagram that you shared with your disdain for makeup?
I apologize to Alicia and the previous makeup artists all the time because I pull faces. I don't know how girls do it, man, because I fucking hate makeup. It's just it's terrible stuff to have to wear. And then, I mean, some people, you know, drag queens and stuff do it for fun. Yeah. And I couldn't think of anything worse. I mean, I hate just getting foundation put on when I'm doing a movie. So I couldn't imagine having to go through but he doing the eyes and the lips and all of that kind of stuff. I feel gross. I know it's not. It's all completely mm-hmm. normal and natural, but I just feel gross for some reason. I think I've got problems. I should probably see somebody.
Or make a film about it.
Well, yeah, just that's how I usually get rid of all my angst is by just writing it down and turning it into a film. So, I mean, there'll be a couple of people that watch this current film that I've just done, and they won't realize that that particular character is them, you know? So that sort of thing tickles me a little bit inside. I get sort of a weird thrill from that, knowing that someone's going to be watching it and they'll go, oh, that's hilarious. Look at him making fun of that guy. And I'm like, yeah, that's actually you, buddy.
Yeah.
And, oh, so yeah, that I like that. The thought of that really tickles me.
I'm imagining a theater full of people where you're coming together to have a viewing.
No, I wouldn't want them all in one place at one time, because that turns into then an angry mob, and we don't want angry mobs. You know, I can take them on one at a time, but not in a mob mentality.
This is true. One of the things that I really love that you just said was that when you were having the makeup put on you, it really made you almost empathize for women that have to wear makeup all the time. And I love this idea of filmmaking as almost, you know, teaching us how to be empathetic, not to get too serious in a, you know, in a funny, you know, interview, but it's just like, that's really interesting in terms of just, you know, how we can learn to be better humans, not only watching movies, but making them.
In all seriousness, Chris, there are learning experiences from every walk of life. I mean, it is, you are correct. I mean, one thing before, you know, I got into, well, I've always been in the entertainment industry in one way or another, but before I was doing, you know, having to get makeup on and make movies and whatnot, it's not something that would strike you. You just assume, you know, as a little kid, for example, you just see a lady walking down the street and she's got a face full of makeup and you just say, okay, well, that's what girls do. But I'm sure there's a lot of women that listen to your podcast that would go, yeah, not fun getting up in the morning and having to spend half an hour putting on all this crap on my face. Don't enjoy it. I wish I didn't have to do it, but I do. And I'm sure there's a lot of ladies out there that have that. Some of them would think the opposite and would really enjoy it and love it. I mean, the makeup artists make a career out of it. They love playing with makeup. I mean, that was one thing that I have learned, absolutely, to go back to a previous question. When I was chatting with Alicia, you know, because I'm just chatting to her just to find out her thoughts on makeup and where she you know, what she thinks and all that kind of stuff, because it's important to me to understand those kind of things. And so I'm chatting to her and I'm like, you know, about skin tones and that sort of stuff. And she's like, it just sort of comes naturally to me. You know, I look at somebody and I'm like, oh, okay, you'd be a such and such. And I just sort of instinctively know what sort of tone of foundation and what tone they need and what I need to do with them. I just sort of, because when I first chatted to her, she wasn't giving me much in regards to conversation and responses, and that's why I was sort of pushing it. And that's when she said, you know, I just kind of instinctively know, and I just know that's what that character and that person needs. And wow. So I just do it, you know. So it's just in her to do that. She just has that creativity in her. And then when you look at the final product, when you look at the characters in this film and how she's done their makeup, I mean, she's done an amazing job. I couldn't there's nothing that I could change at all. I think she did an absolutely sterling job. So she is correct. She just instinctively knows what to do and how to do it, you know, which is it's a real skill. It's a real talent to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that even something as simple as, you know, foundation or the simplest makeup techniques, there's so much artistry in that alone. I mean, you wouldn't want to see me try to do anything revolving around makeup, but I mean, even what we would think of as the most simplest things, there's so much just artistry there.
Well, that is true. So, for example, when I was having a chat to her about in one of the opening scenes where we're going through presentation, and I said, Taylor, who's the female model in this, I said to her, you need to make her look real professional for her second scene. She's got to look like a real professional business lady. And so it took her a while to do that makeup, because she's like, it's not as easy She's like, it's easier to do the whore makeup than it is to do the professional makeup, because the whore makeup is, you know, it's really fun and you get to do this and that. But the professional makeup, it's got to be really precise and really neat and the right tones and the right colors and all that sort of stuff. So it's a lot harder to do the simple than it is to do the hard sometimes, which I can appreciate. I understand where she's coming from. Yeah, I can see what she means.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if you were to release a commentary track of this film, of you and the crew talking through the film itself, what sorts of things do you think we would hear if we watched that?
Well, firstly, I would not allow the crew to do that because it would all be what an asshole Goff is to work for. And we want nothing more to do with this man, and I'm calling the police. So I don't... I wouldn't advise that they be involved.
Somehow I don't think that's true.
In regards to the commentary, I'm not too sure. I'm a real film nerd. And so back in the early 2000s when DVDs were coming out and the big thing was to have the director do a film commentary on them, I was one of those idiots that used to be glued and listen to them all the time. I used to love listening to those. But as in regards to this, I think actually I've got a new respect for people that do that now, because I think it would be difficult on a project like this, because everything is kind of, there's nothing really to describe because everything is there, you know? So it's just, I suppose I could take people through how I came up with each individual character, I suppose. But besides that, there's not a great deal more I can add. I suppose it's all on the screen for people to watch, you know, because one thing I do when I'm writing a script, again, I'm really particular. So I edit it and edit it and edit it. And so there is no wasted footage. Everything that is on the page is on the screen. There is not one line out of place. So it's that heavily edited. So, you know, it's not like I can say, oh, we did have this joke, but we cut it. Or there's a scene that would have gone in here, but we cut it, because that doesn't even happen with me, because I'm so organized down to the finest detail that everything on the script is, even the order of the characters, because I thought when we were editing, I was open-minded to, if I need to swap this character with that character so it makes it flow better, then I can do that, you know, in the edit. But I didn't even do that. So as it was written in the script is how you see it 110%.
That's cool. Any favorite gags that occurred?
I wrote them all, so they're all my favorites. I like the stuff. I tell you what I do like in this. There's a scene with a couple of immigration officers, and in that particular scene, that was something that obviously it was scripted, but you can't script how people are going to run into a room and then run out of a room and all that sort of stuff. And Craig has a good waddle on him when he runs, which Simon was finding very hilarious. So I do enjoy that scene, because it's just how can I word this without sounding like an idiot? I think some of the old school comedy techniques I think work really, really well. And so I remember saying to Simon when we were editing that scene, I'm like, what do you think? And he's like, it's very slapstick. And I'm like, yeah, but it's funny, right? And he's like, yeah, it's hilarious. It's really funny. So it really doesn't matter that, you know, I've thrown in a bit of old school comedy technique. It works. I mean, you know, something that works just works. And I like that scene for that reason, because it's a little bit different, and there's something going on in the office. And then you've got Craig who runs in quite a hilarious fashion.
Yeah, and I love the punch in on the badge so that you see the names of the officers.
That was one thing. So Ilya, who does my props for me, she's like, I won't say what the name, but also when you watch it again, Chris, freeze frame it, because their numbers, their badge numbers are something you might want to take notice of as well. So they've got certain badge numbers and badge names. And so I said to Ilya, well, I've spent all this time and effort making these, you making these badges. We've got to get a couple of nice big juicy close-ups on them so people can read them. So, that was important. And the other part that I like about their badges as well is that I just said to Chris and Craig, who play those two roles, I said to the fellas, look, for the badges, can you just email me your latest acting headshot and we'll just use that as your photo ID? And it's, again, if you pause it, it's quite funny because they're both like, because they're acting headshots, they're both pulling like certain faces that you wouldn't be pulling on an immigration ID badge. So it's, those badges really tickle me. I think they're really funny.
Yeah, I love how much you put into everything. Not just you say you leave it all on in the frame and stuff, but there's so much depth to it that I just appreciate as you're explaining your reasons for doing things and why you're doing things, and you know, even down to the actor headshot. I love that bit of information. That's awesome.
Essentially, Chris, you're speaking to a child, a giant man child. And so it's the little things that make me laugh, and it's the little things that are important. So, for example, it's the truth, though. So, for example, I mean, you don't want to know how much money I spent getting that costume for the guy to wear in the presentation, the one with the top hat. I mean, for that, like, 10-second joke, that cost me a little bit of money to hire the costume and to get it all happening and everything. Just for one stupid joke, I've gone to, like, across town to get a costume especially made up for this guy to wear for a 10-second joke. But to me, that's important, you know, so because it makes it funny and it works and it's silly and I like it. So, you know, it's the lengths I go to sometimes for a 5-second joke, and those badges are another example. I mean, they're on screen just for a few seconds, but yeah, to me, that sort of stuff's really important because it's the little things and the finer details that make something funny.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm thinking a lot about right now is just the community of people that we surround ourselves with. And if you were to define the Beer Nuts Productions community, how would you define it?
I'd like to think that it's inclusive of everybody, you know, because that's my goal. Like, I mean, I'm sure... you've asked me on a previous interview we did, you know, what's your ultimate ambition and goal? And I said, and it still is, you know, that there's 7 billion people on the planet and I won't be happy until all 7 billion have watched and laughed and enjoyed a Beer Nuts Productions film. And it's exactly the same. I mean, I would like to think that my community includes everybody who has a sense of humor. I mean, there's a guy said to me a little while ago, he's like, oh, your stuff, it's a little bit risque, you know, sometimes it's a little bit rude and people might find it offensive. And I'm like, well, they shouldn't, because it's told with humor. You know, there's nothing malice or nasty about what I do. Everything I do is told with the funny bone in order to make people laugh and have a joke and maybe even laugh at themselves and their own actions and what they do, you know? So nothing I do has a mean intent. My intent is purely to entertain and make people laugh. So under that umbrella, I would like to think that the Beer Nuts community is inclusive of everybody. So yeah, I think that might be a really corny and cheesy answer to your question, but it's the truth.
No, not at all. I'm curious how the actors and crew and even the audience push you to up your comedy game.
Well, that's a good question. Your questions are, you're throwing me some curly questions I've never been asked before.
Yes.
I like it. I like it a lot. It's always good to get new questions. I'm stalling now, but
I couldn't tell. I'm enjoying it.
How do they push me? Well, it's not so. I think it's more the viewers. Once I've done a film, right, it's done. Mm-hmm. It's finished. So I can't touch the jokes that I just. So in this last film, How to Land That Dream Job, I mean, I've pretty much squeezed out every joke about job interviews that I could possibly squeeze out. You know what I mean? I would like to think that there's no other job interview jokes out there, because I've absolutely just reamed out every just got every last one out of it. So it means that I can't touch that subject now. So I've got to up my game in that I need to now come up with something bigger and better than the last one. With funnier jokes and all of that kind of stuff. So it's more of a, you don't want to go backwards in life, do you? So you push yourself, don't you? So that you make sure that what you do next is above what you previously did. You know, the whole point of doing this is to make everything bigger and better. And so you got to, I guess that comes back to, I suppose, one of your earlier questions of what did you learn? I learn every time in regards to, so when I budget something, I know that next time that'll cost me exactly this much money. So it'll make my budgeting better and I might be able to get a little bit more out of the money that I've got. So I suppose that's another good learning experience because you do, I mean, with this one, it's the biggest cast and crew I've ever worked with. And I did have more money to make it with, but I was able to get every last dollar, you know, was able to squeeze every last ounce of production out of every last dollar, if that makes sense, to make it that way. So, but yeah, to answer your original question, I guess I just want to, you got to keep improving. Otherwise, what's the point, you know? So, yeah, I think I push myself. I mean, I'm a big believer in exercise, right? So I go down to the gym and I train and I work hard and I've got I'm a competitive guy, but I'm only competitive with myself. So like the rowing machine is a great example. So I go on the rowing machine every day and do a 500-meter sprint and my goal is to beat my record time. I don't care what other people's times are. I just want to break my own PB and break my own record. So every time I go on that rowing machine, I give it 110%. And people might look at me as if I'm crazy because I might make stupid noises and whatnot while I'm doing it. But my goal is to break my record and make myself better than I was the day before. So that's kind of, I suppose, if that's an answer to your question, that's what I'll go with.
No, that's great. I think being able to push yourself is such an important trait in any creative pursuit, not just filmmaking, but it's especially important in filmmaking because I think it, for whatever reason, you can find a niche, you can find a style that you can just milk for too long, I think.
Yeah, well, and that's important to me that I don't do that. So like I said earlier, you know, like I've done, you know, you've seen quite a few of my works now. So you're probably the best one to answer this because you've seen quite a few of my latest works. So while I have done mockumentary style films, you know, I've done pornography and I've done prostitution and I've done the fitness industry and I've done the war on drugs and all that sort of the environment and whatnot. But I would like to think they're all different in style and they're all different in how they're the humor and the jokes are all different. And I would like to think that they're all different. So if someone comes and they download one of them, then the next time they're not going to be seeing exactly the same thing over and over again. That's really important to me.
Yeah. Well, and I think it speaks to growth as an artist as well. I mean, you don't want to just stay stuck. And so,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Goff, this has been a fun, fantastic conversation. And I just have a couple of last questions for you. The first one is, what is your favorite pressurized prop device? Silly string, whipped cream, cheese, or seltzer water?
Well, probably silly string, I would suggest, because you can do more with it, can't you, with silly string?
This is true.
It's more versatile than the others. I'm a practical young man, I suppose, and versatility is important when being practical, so yes.
Awesome. So what was the last film that you saw that just blew your mind?
That's a really good question. What was the last film? I haven't been to the cinema in a couple, because I usually go to the cinema like every 2 weeks or so. I would say out of the 52 weeks of a year, I would see 20 movies because I'm a movie nerd. It's what I like to do. But I haven't been because I've been just so busy with this film and with the release of it that I haven't been to the cinemas in a little bit of time. So I'm just trying to think. The last film I saw that really blew me away would have been... Oh, crikey. I did see, I mean, it's not one that I saw recently, but I was surprised. Well, I'll change your question for you, Chris, because
please
that's
do.
What I can, I can do that being the guest.
Yes,
but,
absolutely.
A film that I didn't want to go and see, but my mate did, and so I went, was A Star Is Born with Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And I didn't want to see that because a musical, it's not my thing, right? It's not my genre. I like dark comedies and comedy films and something that's a bit twisted and a bit out there and a bit strange and all that sort of stuff. That's my sort of, even when it comes to dramas, I like a drama that's not your usual kind of drama. I like things that are a bit unique and a bit different. And I'm like, this is a remake. It's a musical. I'm not going to enjoy this. This is going to suck. And so I went in with a really negative attitude, but it was an incredible film. I think it was just one of the best films I've seen in a long time. It was really, really solid. I liked the music. I liked the story. I liked how it was filmed. I just thought it was the performances were outstanding. I just thought it was a really, really solid film. So yeah, I suppose if I was to twist the question and say, what film did I get dragged to the cinema kicking and screaming about and didn't want to watch, but really enjoyed it, I would say A Star Is Born is probably the best one. Have you seen that particular movie?
I haven't, because I think I have the same kind of feeling that you had about it. So I'm just like, I don't want to see it, you know. And so I think it's on HBO in a couple of weeks, so I'll probably watch it then.
Yeah, well, I would recommend it because, I mean, that's how I kind of got convinced into seeing it. Was a bunch of mates of mine, their girlfriends had dragged them to the cinema to go watch it, and they're like, well, I didn't tell her, but secretly I actually really enjoyed it. And so that kind of tells you. So when the guys go to watch like a romantic comedy, just generally speaking, you know, they go and watch an English romantic comedy and they come out and they go, actually, it was actually really funny and I actually really kind of enjoyed it. But that's when you know it's going to actually be a really good film. You know, I think a great example, because again, I'm a movie nerd, a great example is Love Actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an older film, I know, but it's so well made and it's so funny and it's so hilarious. Yet, I mean, I'm a 37-year-old dude, and back when it came out, I would have been, what, 25? It's not – 25-year-old males is not its target demographic. And yet I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite films because it's just really, really funny. It's really well made, how they twist the stories and intertwine. I think it's really clever. So, it pays to be a bit more open-minded when it comes to your cinema selection.
Absolutely. And we should all be open-minded towards Beernet's Productions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I assume we're going into the part of the show where I promote myself like a whore.
Please
so
do.
So I will just tell everybody that beernutsproductions.com, they can download the new film, How to Land That Dream Job, and they can download all of our films and all of our audio downloads, and everything is available from one place and one place only, and that is beernutsproductions.com. We're also all over the socials, so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you just type in Beer Nuts Productions, we come up. And obviously our YouTube channel, that's got all trailers and all kinds of different media clips and all sorts of fun stuff. So if you go on YouTube and type in Beer Nuts Productions, we come up, and we got tons of free clips on YouTube that people can enjoy as well.
Awesome. Well, Goff, I know you're on your promotional tour now, but what do you think is going to be next to follow this up? I like getting that little hint.
You make me sound like Lady Gaga. I'm on a promotional tour. I sound like a rock star. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I want you to feel like you're a rock star.
It'd be the only time in my life. A blind, bald, 37-year-old Australian male. I don't think rock star is ever going to be in my job description, but hey, I'll take it. Any opportunity I get, I'll take it. But what's next? Well, there's there's a couple of ideas. I might do, I'm thinking I might do another audio piece pretty soon because I haven't done one for a little while, and I like doing the audio sketches. They're quite fun to do. Mm-hmm. So I've got a script that I wrote a little while ago for an audio piece. So I think I might see if I can get the right voice talent for it, then I might go with that one. Or it might be another film. I'm not too sure. So it depends on a few things. But hopefully, whatever it is, it won't be long for people to wait for the next piece of entertainment to come out.
Awesome. Well, Goff, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. And I don't know, it's always great to see you pop up in my email with a new film to promote, because it gives me hope that we can keep producing work and keep, you know, being creative people that are actually producing and not just talking about film. So I think it's pretty awesome and admirable.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And I agree with your sentiment. You know, it's important for people that might be listening to this podcast who have sat through the 40 minutes of my dribble. It's important that, you know, as you say, you don't just talk about it. You know, there's a very famous football coach over here in Australia called John Kennedy, and you can actually watch his speech on YouTube. And so at three-quarter time, this is Australian rules football I'm talking about, at three-quarter time in the grand final, which is our Super Bowl, he goes down to address the players, and they're 20 points behind. And he says to them, don't think, don't hope, do something. Don't think, don't hope, do. And he just kept repeating it, just do something. And they ended up winning by 2 points. And wow, it's the biggest comeback in football history for a grand final, for a Super Bowl, is they came back from 20 points down at three-quarter time to win by 2 points. But the way he just was so passionate, and I enjoy, because again, sometimes, I mean, I think as human beings, sometimes if you're feeling a bit flat, you need something to pick you up. Mm-hmm. And listening to that speech on YouTube, it only goes for about 30 seconds, but just listening to that that piece of audio, it can't help but inspire you. And what he says is correct. You know, don't think, don't hope, do something. And he's absolutely correct, and it applies to what we do. Mm-hmm. Don't think that someone's going to knock on your door and say, here's a bunch of money and a film camera, go direct that script you've just written. You actually have to get out there and do something. You know what I mean? So I amplify your thoughts.
Well, Goff, thank you. I was having a pretty flat day, and you made me feel better, so thank you. I'm just going to end it right there. I mean, yeah, this is why we do these things.
Absolutely. And thank you again, Chris, for having me on the show. I'm very grateful indeed. And hopefully all your listeners enjoyed our witty banter.
Well, you provided the witty. I provided the banter. Before we wrap up this episode of Getting Work to Work, I want to leave you with an important question. What project are you trying to get off the ground, but you're getting discouraged? I hope you'll take the advice that Goff shared from Coach John Kennedy and don't think, don't hope, do something. You know, there are a lot of podcasts you could be listening to, and I'm very grateful that you would spend valuable time listening to Getting Work to Work. Would you be willing to spread the word about the show with your friends, other creative entrepreneurs and leaders who want to get their work to work? You can send them to gwtw.co to access every episode and find the links to stream the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and more. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice, encouragement, or just want someone to say hi to? Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at CM Studios. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.